Well, what's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. The United Kingdom has raised its terror alert level from severe to critical for the first time in a decade, following a suicide blast at a concert late Monday in the city of Manchester that left 22 dead and dozens wounded. British Prime Minister Theresa May said the decision was made by the country's Joint Terrorism Analysis Centre, allowing additional resources for police.
The police have asked for authorization from the Secretary of State for Defence to deploy a number of armed military personnel in support of their armed officers.
She said the deployment will allow police to increase their number of their ranks on patrol in key locations such as concerts and sporting matches.
In the coming days and weeks, there will of course be many events hosted up and down the country. The police will work with the organisers and hosts of these events to come to a judgment about how they can go ahead while making sure the people who attend them are safe and secure.
Terror analyst Luke Howie of Australia's Monash University said Monday's attack bore the hallmarks of Islamic State targets.
Major concerts, major events, sporting events, shopping malls, these are increasingly and have increasingly been primary targets of the ISIS wave of the terror threat.
Police have identified the suicide attacker as 22-year-old Salman Abedi, born in Britain to Libyan parents. The Democratic Republic of Congo's Attorney General has opened an investigation into a former minister over allegations he may have played a role in militia violence in central Kasai region that left a UN sanctions monitor dead. The New York Times reported Saturday that Zaida Catalan, the UN investigator, was killed in March. Flory Numbi said he had a recording of former development minister Clement Kanku speaking with a presumed militia member. This is VOA News. President Donald Trump is in Rome, where he will hold a meeting with Pope Francis and Italian leaders before heading to a NATO meeting in Brussels. Before leaving Israel Tuesday, Mr. Trump said both Palestinians and Israelis told him during his brief two-day visit they want peace.
As I have repeatedly said, I'm personally committed to helping Israelis and Palestinians achieve a peace agreement. And I had a meeting this morning with President Abbas and can tell you that the Palestinians are ready to reach for peace. I know you've heard it before. I am telling you, that's what I do. They are ready to reach for peace.
But he acknowledged making peace won't be easy. He said both sides face tough decisions, but added with determination, compromise, and the belief that peace is possible, Israelis and Palestinians can make a deal. At least one person was killed, dozens arrested Tuesday after Bahraini security forces raided the home of the kingdom's Shia Muslim spiritual leader. Ayatollah Isa Qasim was not among those arrested, but the raid could raise tensions in the Sunni-ruled country with a Shia majority. Qasim could be deported after having his citizenship revoked over alleged links to extremism. The World Health Organization Tuesday elected former Ethiopian health minister Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus as the agency's next director general, the first non-physician and first African.
I have dedicated my life to improving health, to reducing inequalities, to helping people everywhere live more productive lives. That commitment has driven me throughout my life.
He said this is a challenging time for global health and said all roads lead to universal health coverage, calling it his central priority. He replaces Dr. Margaret Chan of China, who served as head of WHO for a decade. Myanmar opens a new round of peace talks Wednesday, hoping to end ethnic strife, a key goal of the government of National League for Democracy leader Aung San Suu Kyi, in a bid to spark economic development. A national ceasefire agreement was reached by the previous transitional government in 2011, but rebel attacks have continued. President Trump has unveiled his proposed 2018 federal budget beginning October 1st, reaching $4.1 trillion, boosting military spending, but proposing cuts in social welfare programs. It seeks to slash more than $3 trillion in government spending over a decade while boosting growth each year to about 3%. OPEC oil producers are expected to extend production cuts for another 9 months when they meet Thursday in Vienna. Saudi Arabia said it favors extending the cut to keep the price of oil from sliding below $50 a barrel. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bote in Washington. Today's Wednesday, May 24th, and here are some of the stories we're covering. An Ethiopian has been elected head of the World Health Organization.
There is a real value in electing a leader who has worked in one of the toughest health environments and transformed the health system.
Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus is the new World Health Organization Director General. Cameroon and Nigeria say they are collaborating against piracy. France's new president reaffirms his commitment to fight terrorism in Africa's Sahel region. And an investigation has opened in the DRC into a parliament member's connection to the country's militia violence.
Si à l'issue de cette instruction, j'ai la conviction que...
Numbi said that if at the end of the investigation he is convinced that the facts are established, then Kanku will be charged with participation in an insurrectional movement.
That's VOA correspondent William Klaus in Kinshasa. Western Central African regions face multiple humanitarian crises, and Ugandans get an extension of their SIM card registration. Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Ethiopian official Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus has been elected Director General of the World Health Organization. Tedros won the post in two rounds of balloting on Tuesday, defeating Dr. Devi Nambaro of Britain and Dr. Sania Nishtar, a Pakistan cardiologist. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva, where 185 member states chose the new WHO chief by secret ballot after the candidates made last-minute pitches.
The candidates have been campaigning for this fiercely contested post for the past year and a half. As they approach the final stretch, each in turn presented his or her most persuasive arguments for becoming the new Director General of the World Health Organization. Former Ethiopian Health Minister Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus told the assembly that he has dedicated his whole life to improving health, reducing inequalities, and helping people everywhere to lead more productive lives. He noted that while the WHO has never had a director general from Africa, no one should elect him just because he's from Africa.
There is a real value in electing a leader who has worked in one of the toughest health environments and transformed the health system and bring a fresh perspective, an angle with which the world has never seen before.
Not to be outdone, the second candidate, David Nambaro of Britain, put in a vigorous performance. He touted his long experience in global health and described the work he has done in tackling infectious outbreaks and emergencies, such as the Ebola epidemic in West Africa. He said he was the best person to lead the fight against newly emerging diseases and ongoing old diseases, including tuberculosis, malaria, and AIDS.
Governments and other investors rightly expect value for money in everything that WHO does. As Director General, I will make sure that the organization's goals are results-focused, transparent, and measurable. All staff, myself included, will be held to account for delivering.
The third candidate, Pakistani physician Sania Nishtar, says she had a proven record of dealing with hard issues and would make constructive changes to the WHO if elected.
I promise to run WHO in the same manner in which I ran my campaign, cost effectively, with full transparency, with a global outlook, with integrity, and respect for all. I have the ability to accelerate the reforms that you have championed.
The new WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus is due to take office on July 1st. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The Attorney General of the Democratic Republic of Congo has opened an investigation into a former government minister's alleged sponsorship of militia violence in the country's Kasai region. The probe follows revelations by the New York Times newspaper that the two UN experts murdered in an area where the militia operates were investigating the former minister's involvement. William Klaus reports from Kinshasa.
Congolese Attorney General Flory Numbi said on Tuesday that he is launching an investigation into Parliament member Clement Kanku, who was also the development minister until last week, when he lost his job in a government reorganization.
Si à l'issue de cette instruction, j'ai la conviction que les faits étaient établis dans
Numbi said that if at the end of the investigation he is convinced that the facts are established, then Kanku will be charged with participation in an insurrectional movement, assassination, arson, malicious destruction, and associating with criminals. Numbi said that if Kanku is charged, he will request that Congo's National Assembly lift his parliamentary immunity. The investigation follows the publication of a report in the New York Times revealing Zaïda Catalan, one of the two UN experts murdered in March in Congo's Kasai region, had obtained a recording of a telephone conversation between Kanku and a supposed member of a militia known as Kamwina Nsapu. The call reportedly took place last August as the militia began an insurrection against the government. In the recording, the Times claims, Kanku can be heard speaking positively about the militia burning down a town and asking if rebels have killed the bodyguards of a colonel in the Congolese military. According to the Times article, Catalan had informed Kanku that she was in possession of the recording before she and her American colleague Michael Sharp were killed. On April 24th, the Congolese government showed reporters a grainy video of Sharp and Catalan being murdered by men it claimed were members of the Kamwina Nsapu militia. The government did not disclose how it had obtained the footage. Kanku attempted to hold a news conference at a Kinshasa restaurant on Tuesday afternoon, but about 20 policemen prevented him from addressing reporters. Later, at his private residence, Kanku and his lawyer spoke to the press.
Je suis consterné.
Kanku says he is dismayed by the allegations of involvement in these criminal actions, which he totally refutes.
Il est sûr qu'à ce stade, ce serait prématuré de confirmer l'authenticité.
Kanku's lawyer, Aime Kilolo, said it would be premature to confirm whether or not the recording is authentic, but noted that his client's name is not explicitly cited in the audio. The conflict between the Kamwina Nsapu militia and the government is now in its 10th month. The armed group has been condemned for recruiting children and the military for its disproportionate use of force. While at least 400 civilians have been killed, more than 1.2 million people have been displaced by the fighting. William Clowes for VOA News, Kinshasa.
The Gulf of Guinea remains a global hotspot for piracy, with reported attacks concentrated off the coast of Nigeria. Regional naval coordination has been a challenge as the Gulf touches 17 countries. Cameroon and Nigeria, however, are now reporting some success. Moki Edwin Kinzeka has the story from aboard a Cameroonian naval vessel near the Nigerian city of Calabar.
Nigerian Navy officials receive Cameroon's warship Lentem as it endures strong waters to arrive off the coast of Calabar in Nigeria. Among the officials is Captain Muhammad Bida of the Nigerian Navy.
As the Cameroonian warship is approaching, definitely the Navy have to come and receive the vessel and escort the vessel inside. And as you can see, our channel is the longest channel in Nigeria. We have about 49 nautical miles. That's about 90 kilometers inward.
The visit is part of ongoing cooperation that began between the Cameroonian and Nigerian navies in 2014. Each country allows the other's navy to enter its territorial waters in pursuit. The two navies have also established a communication system and provide each other backup during operations, as VOA saw firsthand. On their way to Nigeria, the Cameroonian soldiers opened fire to scare the crew of a ship they said was fishing in prohibited area. Nigerian Navy boats soon arrived to assist.
Un vaisseau de pêche pirate on intimait l'ordre de s'arrêter. Il ne faisait que
Captain Fabrice Ntege of Cameroon's Navy says the illegal fishing vessel disobeyed instructions to stop until authorities threatened to use force. He says all of the occupants on board the fishing boat were arrested. He also says they don't hesitate to threaten force, like firing warning shots, as the maritime area around Calabar was once notorious for pirate activity. Rear Admiral James Oluwole of Nigeria's Eastern Naval Command in Calabar says the two countries have cut piracy attacks in the area dramatically.
We have seen better collaboration. We have, on both sides, been able to checkmate the acts of piracy and made some arrests, even all the way from Angola down to the end of Senegal. Before 2013, it wasn't that easy to collaborate. But once all these countries came together, we have come a long way.
The Nigerian Navy official said these waters straddling Cameroon and Nigeria saw 53 piracy-related incidents in 2013 and 2014. So far this year, the International Maritime Board has reported 14 such incidents in all of the Gulf of Guinea on its online live piracy and armed robbery map. None of these incidents has occurred on the portion of the Gulf between Cameroonian border and Nigeria's Calabar. That's not to say the situation is calm. The navies of the two countries say they routinely deal with illegal fishing as well as cases of kidnappings for ransoms around Calabar and along Cameroon's Bakassi Peninsula. They also deal with cases of drug trafficking and ecological threats. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Calabar, Nigeria.
Today's Wednesday, May 24th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte, Washington. Please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Let's send shout out to listeners on these our VOA affiliate stations: Buffalo FM in Monrovia, Liberia; Sports Radio Brela FM in Nigeria; Capital FM in Blantyre, Malawi; and Rush FM in Bamenda, Cameroon. Daybreak Africa time is 17 and a half minutes past the hour. The Western Central African region is facing multiple humanitarian crises in various locations, according to the World Food Programme. Abdou Diagne is the organization's director for Western Central Africa. He spoke with Ricky Shryak about a famine that is threatening hundreds of thousands of people in northeastern Nigeria, violent clashes in Central African Republic, and Ebola menace in the DRC.
But the main challenge that we are confronted with is funding. It's really getting the resources to be able to assist really those who are in need. Today, particularly today, based on assessment that we have collectively made, not only WFP and all the partners, including the government, has shown that if we don't act now, there may be a famine. Particularly from this period, June to September, which is what we call the lean season, there is a need to increase the assistance, at least up to 2 million people. For that, we need $250 million to assist them, and we don't have them. And if we don't have them, either we reduce the number of people that we want to serve, or we will reduce the ration.
Last year, in some parts of Central African Republic, farmers were just returning to fields after years of no access to their farms. But how has this recent violence hampered any improvements that were made last year?
What is happening in Central African Republic is extremely worrisome. 2 weeks ago, I was there. The number of displaced people were about 400,000, and the number of people who were still refugees in the neighboring country was another 400,000. With the recent displacement, first, the number of people internally displaced in the country increased, and the worst is people today are afraid, particularly at this moment, to go back to their farm and try to work because they are afraid of attack, particularly women and girls. So we may have another biggest failure on the agriculture for next year.
Is the current location of the Ebola outbreak in DRC a spot where people transit to and from, what are the chances it could spread over into nearby CAR?
We knew Ebola in Congo. I think the country that has faced Ebola in the world, Congo is the one who has faced it many, many times without having the impact that it had on Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea. That area, there is no control. The borders are open. You can move freely from one part to the other. If there was 2-3 cases in Central Africa, it would be a chaos. In the country, there is nothing.
Is there an isolation ward anywhere in the entire country?
I don't think so. An area dedicated. There was nothing in Guinea. There was nothing in Sierra Leone. And it was in Central Africa.
Abdou Diagne is the World Food Programme Director for Western Central Africa. He was speaking to Ricky Shryak from Senegal's capital, Dakar. During his election campaign, France's new president, Emmanuel Macron, promised he would visit French troops in Mali. Just days into his term, he made Mali his second foreign visit and his first to Africa. Maria Gallivan has the story from Paris.
In choosing Mali for his second foreign trip, just a week into his presidency, Emmanuel Macron was sending a clear message that he is determined to continue the fight against terrorism. France sent troops into Mali in 2013 in a military intervention that pushed the extremists from their strongholds, but hasn't stopped the wave of killings, kidnappings and attacks there by Islamic militants. Macron went to the French troops' base at Gao, where he met with Malian President Ibrahim Boubacar Keïta and reaffirmed France's commitment to its military involvement in the Sahel region.
La France est engagée depuis le début à vos côtés.
France has been involved since the beginning, by your side, he said, and I'm here today to tell you it still is. France currently has 4,000 troops in the West African nations of Mali, Niger, Chad, Burkina Faso and Mauritania as part of Operation Barkhane, France's largest military operation overseas. Mali's specialist, Professor Philippe Hugon, says that while it's too soon to tell what Macron's overall policy on Africa will be, this visit is a clear sign. It shows a continuity in relation to French interventions in Africa, he says.
La détermination de la France sera complète à vos côtés.
President Macron said France's determination will be total in the fight for security, not just in Mali, but also in the Sahel. But he also said other European countries needed to get involved, and he was critical of some African nations for not doing enough. A former investment banker and economy minister, Macron has little experience in the fight against terrorism or military matters. In going directly to Gao, Macron fulfilled his promise to visit his troops, but may have ruffled some diplomatic feathers by not stopping in the capital Bamako first. Professor Hugon says the visit could have been better handled. While Macron was not on a state visit, but rather going as head of the French armed forces, Hugon says that in itself could send the wrong message. France, of course, played its role, he says, but as time goes on, it could look like an occupying force. So I think it could have been handled differently on a diplomatic level. Operation Barkhane was launched to wipe out armed terrorist groups in the Sahel region. But while there have been successes, it's unclear what the current strategy of those groups is as alliances shift. And the situation in northern Mali remains a concern for the new French president, one that's not going away anytime soon. Maria Gallivan for VOA News in Paris.
Ugandans have welcomed their government's decision to postpone the deadline for SIM card registration. But the head of the Ugandan Communication Commission, known also as UCC, describes the registration exercise as a success so far. Godfrey Mutabazi says more than 95% of cell phone subscribers have already registered their SIM cards. From Uganda's capital, Kampala, Mungumi Davis Rakarinch files this report.
Uganda's President Yoweri Kaguta Museveni issued a new SIM card registration deadline Tuesday. Mr. Museveni ordered the Uganda Communications Commission to postpone the deadline to August 30th. The president said in a tweet, "I have agreed to this proposal on condition that the new deadline will be respected. SIM card registration will therefore run until August 30th, 2017," the president tweeted. On Friday, unverified SIM cards were switched off on the directive of the Uganda Communications Commission. Kampala resident Fatuma Nasiwa Mugenya Soka says she was gutted when all her two SIM cards were disconnected. The fashion and design businesswoman says she is now unable to communicate with both her relatives and business partners.
Now I cannot receive the tuition through mobile money. I cannot chat with my friends. Actually, we have a group, we have coursework to research about, but I cannot do it. Actually, even now I cannot contact my dad because we are not staying together.
Another Ugandan, Doreen Mbabas, says she was disconnected even though she was registered. Mbabas says she was surprised when she realized she was offline.
It really affected me in the way that I was supposed to travel to Oman. My phone went off. When the agents I was supposed to go with contacted me, my phone was off. So it affected me in that I missed my flight to Oman.
Both Mbabas and Mugenya Soka are glad that the SIM card registration deadline was postponed. Another Ugandan who welcomes the postponement of the deadline is Edward Oneka, who hails from Northern Uganda district of Gulu.
I'm very happy that the president extended the deadline. I don't have a national ID. For the first time, I asked my friend to help me register my Airtel because I have two SIM cards. Since they've extended the deadline, so I can go and get another friend who will help me register my MTN SIM card.
Mutabaz says the purpose of the directive issued by the president is to ensure that Ugandans have their SIM cards connected. He says registration of SIM cards is to improve security within and outside of Kampala. NIRA stands for the National Identification Registration Authority, a body responsible for issuing national identity cards in Uganda. Registration of SIM cards is either by national ID for Ugandans or by passport for foreigners. There are more than 22 million mobile phone users in Uganda. The registration exercise, which started in April, was initially meant to last 1 week, but was extended several times because of public outcry. It remains to be seen if subscribers will respect the new deadline. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Ruakarinj in Kampala, Uganda.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Al-Shabaab militants have attacked some 14 villages in southern Somalia in an apparent attempt to disrupt a planned government offensive. Most of the villages that came under attack on Tuesday are located near the towns of K50 and Muri, about 50 kilometers south of the capital, Mogadishu. Witnesses said teams of 10 to 12 militants attacked the villages, setting fire to houses, abducting civilians, and stealing villagers' livestock. Authorities in South Sudan have closed part of the country's border with the Democratic Republic of Congo to prevent the spread of the deadly Ebola outbreak declared by the World Health Organization in a remote northern part of the DRC 2 weeks ago. The WHO has confirmed that 4 people have died from the disease in the DRC. Lino Utu, deputy governor of Tambura State, said the movement of people and goods between the two countries at the border town of Ezu is restricted until further notice. That's it for this Wednesday, May 24th edition of Daybreak Africa. Join us again tomorrow for more Africa news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clarty and Ricky Stradak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Peter Only, I'm James Barton in Washington saying, have a lovely day, Africa.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, an in-depth look at the significance of Africa Day. Africa Day commemorates the creation of the Organization of African Unity on May 25, 1963. The historical and cultural meaning of Africa Day.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. This is Peter Clarty, host of VOA's Africa Weekend show, Nightline Africa. Tune in. You will be glad you did.
Nightline Africa is a fast-paced, tightly edited news show designed to keep our listeners engaged from beginning to end. Nightline comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kHz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kHz, 19.2 meter band.